Advices Radio is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The opinions of the host are not meant to be taken as medical advice. If you have a health concern, see a doctor immediately.
When it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. So it's not that hard for me to give him the wrong advices.
Welcome, everybody, to Advices Radio. I'm your host, Scott. Advices is presented by Naps Gear. Tonight, I have a very special guest. But first of all, I would like to give a big shout-out, and that shout-out is to James Grelish, the creator of the groundbreaking documentary film Under Construction, and now Under Construction 2. There are just a handful of guys out there, I'd say guys like James, guys like Mike Pulcinella, who are really bringing art and creativity back to films about bodybuilding. So a big shout-out to James. Now, tonight, my guest is the main subject of the movie Under Construction 1 and 2, Dave Crossland. Dave is a massive guy who gets even bigger through the course of this film. His goal in this movie is to do whatever it takes to reach 400 pounds. He is also a steroid educator, a performance and image-enhancing drug specialist, and for this reason, he is an absolute perfect fit for Advices Radio, since one of our goals of the show is to help educate the new guys out there for all the potential risks of steroids and teach them how to do things right. So, Dave, thanks for being with me.
My pleasure.
So, to get started, I got to tell you, I just watched Under Construction 2 yesterday. And man, it's a heavy film. It's overall just really well shot.
The production value is very good. It's not what you'd expect two guys together to produce. There's no doubt about that. It is very slickly done.
Oh yeah, yeah. There's no question about that. And you guys take it to a pretty dark place. I don't want to give everything away. You know, this is something that the everybody's going to have to watch the film. But I
think it's not what people expect, and I think it's not what people expect if they've seen the first one either. It is a completely different film. It is a very dark film.
Yes,
it tracks some incredibly disturbing, painful, and low times. I personally don't like watching it. I've seen it once, and I'm quite happy to never have to watch it again.
Really? Wow.
It's when you go through something like that, it's when you're in the middle of that, it is an experience, and when it is so demanding of you, you tend to switch off a lot of your normal sort of feedback mechanisms because you're so focused on pursuing what you've got to pursue. Now, there were points in filming that where I was in a wheelchair and I was training still, and I was literally crawling across the floor from one machine to another machine.
Oh, God.
because I'd committed to the project and I was finishing the project. It covers some personal trauma. But when you look back at that from an outside perspective as a third party, it's very, very weird watching yourself go through a period of your life that was, shall we say, challenging, and that's probably putting it very mildly.
Yeah, yeah. Would you say that this is one of the biggest obstacles that you had faced, everything that you had gone through in this, the making of this?
No, without doubt, I'm more so. The conversations I'd had with myself about stopping were happening at some points on a daily basis. I spent 6 months of not just being in pain, being in excruciating pain.
Wow, I believe that. Wow.
The film, unfortunately, you know, there's only so much pain you can show.
Sure.
And at the time of filming, James had backed off a little bit because he knew I was struggling. I was struggling to function. I couldn't walk. I couldn't stand. he knew I was still hitting the gym and just trying to keep and maintain as much as I could. But when he rejoined filming, I was still in a lot of pain, but at least I was able to move. And you'll notice in the film at certain points when I'm walking, I don't walk normally. I've got a bit of a strange gait, and that's because it causes me pain.
Okay.
I mean, that's just one aspect. You've got health issues. You've got just the demands doing what I was doing puts on your body from every aspect, the training, the drugs, the food, the lifestyle.
Sure.
Slowly but surely through the film, you just see me deteriorate.
I could definitely see that, and I can imagine. I had wondered about that if you had thought about quitting at certain points. So it's
When you're laid on the floor screaming in agony, crying out of frustration and pain because you cannot move, you definitely think, "Why the fuck am I doing this to myself?"
So what was the driving force then that made you decide to continue on?
I don't quit. This was something I'd set out to do for myself.
Okay.
The fact that we were, and I had a lot of, I did want to see how far I could go. And looking back now with where I am now, I would have said, I should have stopped there or I should have stopped there. But when you're in the middle of it, you ignore a lot of the problems or you push them to the back of your mind or you make excuses for them. You don't see who and what you are becoming. But not only that, there was also the added pressure, maybe not pressure, but I didn't want to let anybody down. We'd committed to making this thing. James had committed to making this thing with me.
Sure.
We'd invested both emotionally and financially. At some point, we are looking at probably producing a very short film documentary on the making of the film.
Okay. That would be interesting to see the scenes.
Yeah,
huh?
It's more because we have both gone through a lot of personal trauma within this film. There was a period of time when we actually thought the thing was cursed. I know that sounds crazy, but every aspect that we've had involved this film has been painful, both emotionally and physically, and it's taken its toll massively on both of us, but also on people around us as well, family members and our own personal support structures.
I imagine just the people around you who cared about you and loved you, seeing you go through this, I could imagine that there was a sense of powerlessness that they almost had.
Yeah, and you know, my wife is massively supportive, but she's no fool.
Sure.
And she had concerns, and she voiced those concerns on a regular basis. And there was a point, and you see it in the film, where we get to a point where it's like, it stops.
Yeah.
But for her to put aside her fears and her worries and her concerns for me in order to support me was a massive sacrifice for her. And you could argue that, she shouldn't have done that as she cared for you, but at the same time, she knew the effects it would have on me if I didn't make the decision myself.
Yeah, that makes sense.
If someone took that choice away from me, she knows how damaging that would be to me. And she also knew I wasn't stupid enough to go to the point where I was really going to screw myself up.
At least she hoped so, right? Now, as a photographer and a video maker myself, I know that just the act of observing something changes it. How did it feel trying to be comfortable and be yourself while still displaying and showing, you know, all the stuff to the camera?
You get used to it. UC1's filming schedule was quite intense, and it was actually done over quite a short period of time. Two was done over a very long period of time. But I've done work within TV before. I've done advertisements, I've done interviews, I've done documentaries as a guest speaker type situation. I've advised a lot, so I'm well aware of TV production.
Okay.
Now, one of the things we didn't want to do with this is we didn't want to stage anything or set anything up. And I trust James. And I think that's probably the biggest thing. When I work within TV companies generally, I'm very guarded and very suspicious.
Sure, that makes sense. Yeah.
I watch what I say. I know it doesn't matter what I say to James. He will treat it in the context of what it was meant to mean, even if it didn't come out quite how it was supposed to. And I mean, he had so much footage, we could have made a 4-hour film and still not have been boring, really. But obviously, we have to have it at a practical runtime.
Sure, sure.
So there was a lot of stuff that was good quality that still didn't make the cut just because we didn't have room. But he's sympathetic, and he manages to put the message across and portray the situation in both an artistic way, but in a very truthful and factful, hard-hitting way. And I don't want to flower anything.
Right, right.
But also, I want things to be dealt with, you know, with a matter of respect. And I trust him. I trust him wholeheartedly that way. There is no editing input from me whatsoever.
Interesting.
I saw the film the day it was released.
Okay. Wow. Wow. Okay. Interesting.
So I, you know, I have 100% trust that he will not screw me up.
That's, and it makes sense too, that now you had seen, you know, the first film you guys had made together, and you've established that relationship. So that makes sense to me. Let me take you back here a little bit. Now, I know in the film you had said that you had begun using anabolics at the age of 19, correct?
Yes.
Now, how old are you now?
Oh, God. Hang on.
I put you on the spot, huh?
44.
Okay. Now, with the health issues and concerns that had come up, do you believe that age has played a role? Do you feel that side effects get worse with anabolics as you get older?
I think there are several things, yes. I think stress factors definitely play a role, and one of my biggest issues was stress. Physical stress, emotional stress, chemical stress, all of them, all together. And I think when you're younger, you cope with that a lot better. You also cope with hormone fluctuations a lot better when you're younger. The older you get, the more gentle you have to be with drug increases.
Sure. I've personally noticed that as I've gotten older, my body tolerates orals a lot less than it used to.
The big problem I have now is that I just physically cannot cope with the way my brain and my heart want to train.
Okay.
I mean, we train. I'm now back up to more or less full training intensity.
Okay.
But it's still not as nutty as it was when I was 20, 21, 22.
Is your training more of high intensity, like short workout hit style training, or do you more volume?
I'll give you an example. Okay. This morning was chest.
Okay.
Started with flat bench, a couple of reps of 15, 20 reps with the bar. I still carry some injuries, and I've still got, obviously, my left pec is still torn off.
Okay.
Then we did a couple of sets of 10, 12 reps with a plate. Then we went up to 2 plates. Then we went up to 3 plates. Then we went up to 3.5 plates. And then we went back in at 3.5. Failed 2 force reps, dropped to 2.5. Went to failure with a force rep, dropped to 2. Went to failure with a force rep, dropped to 1. Went to failure with a force rep, re-rack, rested 10 seconds, picked the bar up, and went again.
Okay.
That was one working set.
That's an intense set right there.
Now, we then went on to cable crossovers.
Okay.
We went back into it twice because I was pissed off that I hadn't pushed as hard as I thought I could have done. And then we went into chest press. And on the chest press, we did a drop set, but we started throwing in negatives and force reps with negatives and stuff like that at the end. Literally, at the end, I just couldn't move.
Wow.
My chest. It was just completely destroyed. And that's a typical workout. That's our typical intensity. Now, the only difference between that and when I was 23, 24, is I would have been starting with 5 plates on the bar.
Okay. Now, how long did this workout take today?
We did chest and tries in 1.5 hours, and we move at a fast pace.
Okay.
Some of our sets are 70, 80 reps.
Now, do you believe that if you weren't enhanced, you would have to approach training differently?
I'm not enhanced. I haven't been for 3 months.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. So would you say that for all the guys out there, I know that there's a lot of guys that are newer to training and newer to anabolics that in the audience here. Would you say that you would suggest that you train just as intensely whether you're using anabolics or not?
Yes. The only difference is when I'm using anabolics, the reps keep coming.
Okay.
They don't seem to come any easier, but the bar still moves. Well, you've got to take in body types as well. You also got to take in experience.
Okay.
Now, what I found is, though, in general, if you push to your limit, then you don't really need to change your training, because your limit is extended when you're enhanced.
Okay, that makes sense.
You still need to be aware of your body type. Now, what you'll get is you'll get young lads that are naturally quite slim, struggle to put weight on, and they might train quite brief and quite intensely. And then when they go enhanced, they realize that they can continue for longer. So they do so. But that's going to work against them because they're naturally lean anyway. So they need to conserve as many calories as possible for growth.
Okay.
So, you know, volume generally is picked up by people. I find volume very boring.
Okay.
You know, set after set, it just bores me stupid. I can't do with it. Now, you can train long or you can train hard, but you can't do both. It's as simple as that. And if you're training intensely, then you're not going to be able to train for very long.
That makes sense.
You're going to be just worn out.
Yeah.
The thing is, when you train intensely, you also need to be intense and brief with your rest periods as well. There's no point training intensely for a set like the set I just described.
Right.
And sitting on your ass for 10 minutes.
Right.
Because you're shot from the set. You've got to get going. Otherwise, you will start to recover and your workout will end up getting longer and longer and longer. And as a result, you'll get in a situation where you're not being optimum with your development through your training. The biggest fault I see of most people when you take away stuff like form, which is another big problem for a lot of people, is they just don't train hard enough.
So what would you suggest some of the new guys out there do to increase that intensity? What would be some suggestions you'd make?
Set limit.
Set limit? How so? What do you mean?
Right. I'm going to train chest.
Yep. Okay.
I'm allowed 3 exercises. I'm allowed 12 sets in total.
So you're telling me that once you put that limitation in there, you're going to have to do everything you possibly can within that 12 sets.
Now, what will happen is the first few workouts you get, they'll be shit.
Okay.
And you'll feel like you've not done anything. But you use that to fuel the next workout.
Yeah.
Your body and you will learn to dig deeper and push harder.
That takes time.
Yes, it does. It won't happen overnight.
Yeah.
And I mean, I go through bouts, and even now, and I tend to flow. As you get more experience, you learn to listen to your body and you learn to flow with it and you learn to just not to fight what you realize is just where you are. So, you know, I mean, I've gone in and I'll always try and push hard, but some days it just isn't going to happen.
Sure.
And you will know fairly quickly. The more experience you get, the quicker you'll realize that this isn't working for me today. And then that's the day where you might think, you know what, I'll switch it up. I'll do TUT work. I'll do time and attention. I'll make combi reps 10 seconds long.
Okay.
Or, you know what, I'll do some high volume, lightweight, just sort of pump sets. I won't get any growth out of it. I'll flush a bit of blood through, use it as a feeder set, and walk away having done something because my head, and nine times out of 10, it's your head.
Yeah.
More than your body. My head just isn't there.
I find that when I take that attitude and I decide, say, you know, I'm going to do these feeder sets, by the end of the workout, I end up a lot of times having a lot more in me than I actually thought I would have.
Well, we've all gone in there feeling like shit and thinking this is going to be crap. And then 4 sets in, we're on fire and busting PBs left, right and center.
Right.
You know, I mean, I went into legs on, I'm trying to think, Saturday. I'm carrying a little bit of a twinge in a tendon in my knee. Nothing major, just a little tweak. And I was like, this isn't going to be much of this. So I slowed everything down. God, my legs are killing me. And just, you know, I find your body, people say, well, you need to constantly change. You don't, because no one set is ever going to be the same.
Sure.
The guys starting out, you know, the more advanced you get, the more repertoire you get within techniques and styles and stuff, and the more things you can pull. But when you're starting out, just keep it simple. Fix on the basics, good form, full range of motion, and learn to feel the movement.
Yes.
If you're bench pressing and all you're feeling it is in your arms and your shoulders, then why are you bench pressing?
I totally agree with that.
You know, do something else or go back to the bench and deconstruct it and go light and go slow and change hand positions and change grips and change range of motions, change arcs and movements until you feel it where you want it. Then build on that. And as you get more experience, you get to the point where you can go in and you can just start, you can fire a body part up straight away.
Yeah, yeah.
Now you do one set of any exercises, right? I can put that where I want it now.
I found that one of the best ways to, as you said, like deconstruct an exercise is to, number one, lower the weight. You know, get, you use something that you can handle first and that you can really work on contracting that muscle. Is that a suggestion that you would make as well?
Yes. The other thing I'd say is slow it down.
Slow it down.
You'll be surprised in how effective doing reps that have a 4 second positive and a 4 seconds negative will be in teaching you how to master that movement.
Absolutely.
Because there's no momentum, there's no hiding place, there's no carrying through. It's all muscular drive throughout the range.
Absolutely.
And within that actual movement, you can slightly adjust things. So in one rep, as you go up, you can slightly twist palms out, in, change grips.
Ah.
See, all right, that's it now. Now I'm feeling it. Right, so you just stay there. That's it, I've got that.
Yeah, yeah.
Fix that, and then you can start putting the weight on, and then when you go back to the weights you were using, it will be hitting your chest where you want it. People think about reps, and they think about sets, and they think about weight on the bar, and your muscle knows none of this. Your muscle knows loading force, stress, and that is it.
Yes.
So the first thing you need to do is get that exercise to stimulate the muscle the way you want it to. Then you can start increasing either the weight or the reps or change the tempo. It doesn't matter which, as long as you're inducing stress to that muscle. We use reps as a guide for volume of what work we've done, but I could do 6 reps on a set, you could do 12 reps on a set, and my 6 reps may be more productive because of the style of the rep, because of the focus, because of how I construct the movement. It's about learning all these things, and it takes time, but you learn by experimentation, not by going in there and trying to do your 1 minute rap on bench every frigging week.
Yeah, yeah, that serves nothing but the ego.
No. And, you know, I've never been particularly strong for my size. I mean, yeah, I've had some good numbers up in the past, but apart from my shoulders and maybe rowing movements, I've never been really strong when it comes to strong people's territory.
What kind of weight have you rowed?
260 bent over row, kilo.
Okay. Wow. So what I'm trying to think here. What
about 580, nearly 600 pound bent over row?
That's ridiculous.
How
many times could you get that?
About 4 or 5 on a good day.
Jeez.
Don't get me wrong, they weren't super strict, but I would do 405 very strict.
Sure, and you obviously you didn't hurt yourself in the process, so.
I've had some injury issues, but they've done due to trapped nerves, not actually due to an issue with muscularity of my back. Even though the pain's been radiating from my back, it's not actually my back that's caused the problem.
Okay. Now, in the movie, I had seen some issues that you were dealing with physically, with what it sounded like were trapped nerves. How are things going with that now?
It's improving. Basically, what has happened a long, long time ago, I was crushed under a full-size Chevy, actually.
Oh, God.
It landed on top of me. Unbeknown to me, during my recovery, I didn't recover properly and my body adapted. The result of that was I had very low glute activation.
Okay.
And very poor lower ab wall activation, which meant my core strength came from upper abs, my psoas, and my spinal erectors.
Okay.
I don't know, the psoas attaches to your first, second, third, fourth vertebrae in your spine and runs through your hip region down into your quad. I'd got up to regularly squatting 300 key, but I was aware that I had more if I could get my glutes firing properly. So I'd drop the weight back down and start to focus on getting glute activation. Now, I made a mistake. To me, the weight was light, but it was still way too part heavy for my glutes to come in properly. So what happened was the load got thrown into my spinal erectors.
Ah.
And as a result, my spinal erector spasmed, the end result of that was that my psoas was the only thing that was keeping me upright. That got extremely stressed and clamped around my femoral nerve, crushing it. So I had immense pain in predominantly my right leg, but also my left leg and my hip and regions, and all through my core from the nerve being crushed. And it's still an ongoing process because obviously I've had, it was, this problem was over 12 years. So I've had 12 years of damage and my muscles working in an incorrect way that I've got to try and now correct. And it's coming back. I'm slowly, a bit short. I mean, I'm walking fine now. Still get a bit of back pain. But that isn't, that's just from the fact that the muscle's taking the load instead of my glute.
Okay.
But with my leg workouts now, I'm getting a lot better glute activation and I'm more focused on glute activation. So I'm not moving big numbers at all at the moment, but it's more a focus of making sure everything's working in sequence.
Sure.
And I'm building off the back of that.
Good, good. Now, you had mentioned a little bit ago that at this time you are currently not enhanced at all. How is that going for you?
Fine, holding at 360.
Nice.
I think the thing was, I'd been over 360 now for about 2.5 years.
Okay.
So, and I'm not lean. I never am lean. It's just not something I bother with. And I've still got quite high levels of water retention due to my kidneys not working properly. That's a long-term thing. That's not a drug-related thing.
Okay.
But... No, I'm good, mate. I don't see the point in being enhanced unless you can make them work for you. And I can't make them work for me at the moment, so what's the point?
Okay.
How about, as I said earlier, you know, I'm only really getting into full intensity now.
I see.
Until my core function is correct and my glute activation is correct, there's no point firing drugs in out of the problem.
How about your health markers? I imagine everything else has to be improving now in that department as well.
Bloods are good, liver's good, heart's excellent, cholesterol, bad cholesterol is very good. Good cholesterol is a little bit subdued. It's about 2 points down from where it should be, but it's on the improvement. The only issue I have is my kidney function, which is a long-term problem that I've had. Well, I actually think I had 12 years off training.
Okay.
And I was 420 pounds of fat.
Okay.
I think that's where the problem started.
Yeah, that's so much weight to have on the human body.
Obviously, my body weight at the end of the last film was 415 pounds. Now, a large proportion of that was water. But my size in general doesn't help the situation. And, of course, no, the drug use hasn't helped the situation, but it's not caused it, and it's not... I mean, in fact, actually, at the moment, my kidney function's the best it's been in the last 6 years.
Nice. One of the things that I found to be a very disturbing reality that a lot of us have to consider facing is the potential of there being heavy metals in the products that the UGLs are putting out. How are those things going now? I know that you were seeing, was it some aluminum and lead and maybe something else in your blood?
Yeah, they seem well under control now. The biggest impact I was having at the time was on my central nervous system.
Okay.
And it all compounded. You'll notice in the film that my skin quality deteriorates throughout.
Okay, I did notice that. I wasn't sure if that was acne or if something was going on.
It is, but it's not from the normal route.
Okay.
Now, I got a lot of grief on my YouTube channel. Oh, it's the drugs, stop this, you know, it's poor issue management and all this crap. And it isn't. Basically, it was stress.
Okay.
But it was stress, not from the point of view of, you know, oh, God, I've got a deadline to make at work and, oh, I'm stressed out. It was stress on my nervous system.
Ah.
So the weight, the food, the training, the drugs, and the heavy metal poisoning. Now, the one thing heavy metal does hit very hard is your nervous system.
Interesting.
And it was all that was causing the issue. And the acne, unfortunately, was only on my face.
Okay.
If it had been on my back or something, You know, at least you can cover it up.
Sure, sure.
It wasn't. And at certain times, it looked like a hamburger on my face.
Thus, the movie was cursed.
The movie was cursed for lots of things. But, I mean, that's all good. Good now.
Well, good. Was there anything you did to try to fix that? Like donating blood or anything? Or is it something that's just corrected on its own?
It's something that the only thing I did mainly was starting to supplement with silica.
Okay. And how does that
happen? Having magnesium supplementation and magnesium salt baths.
Okay.
And that helps remove the heavy metal toxins.
I see. So from what I understand about like a magnesium salt bath, that would help to draw water out through the skin.
And with it pulls the heavy metals, basically, effectively. It pulls the heavy metals out of the tissue.
Interesting. That's I like that. That's a good idea. Now, you had mentioned, too, during this film, you had stepped things up. You were not just using anabolics. You had introduced insulin and growth hormone. Do you mm-hmm. feel that those two things made a substantial difference in your progress?
Yes and no.
Okay.
They are very, very powerful drugs, and they are very, very effective drugs. The problem I had was I got to the point my body was starting to shut down.
Okay.
Not in the sense of internal function, but just in the sense of it just couldn't cope with the demands I was placing on it anymore. And one of the first things to go was my ability to eat.
Ah.
And so, though, yes, I do think they were productive, I don't think I saw their full potential because I just couldn't feed enough.
I see.
And when you're hitting those sizes at 6'1", you aren't talking, you know, you're talking 10,000 calories and in excess of a day.
That's a full-time job right there.
It is. It is. I had no appetite, I had massive distension, and I really was struggling with food.
I imagine.
So I don't feel I maximized or got the full benefit of including those in my protocols, but I still do regard them as being very effective, yes.
Okay.
I suppose the best balance I had of everything working right was when I hit about when I was about 392, 393.
Okay.
At that point, I was big, full, pretty strong, but I still regain a reasonable amount of condition.
Okay.
Now, as much condition as you can expect to have, knocking on the door of 400 pounds.
Sure, sure. Now, I had noticed that you had mentioned you were using European-grade, farm-grade growth, and I saw some hydrotropin kits in there. Well, do you see a major difference between something like the blue tops versus the hydrotropins versus the farm-grade?
Right. The problem with the generics, like the Hyges and Kigtropin and all the rest of them, is that they're inconsistent.
Okay.
Now, you can buy one batch and it's really good. You go back to buy an next batch and it can be a bag of shit.
Okay.
If you're getting genuine pharma, which is the first challenge, to make sure you've got the real thing.
Sure.
Then at least you know you've got a consistent level. Now, generally speaking, the genuine pharma is going to be about three times the cost of your Chinese generic.
Right.
Is it three times better? No.
Okay. That's a question I've always wondered.
But it is better. So it comes to the point of, is the expense for you worth using the best stuff there is?
Ah, I see.
Now, it may not be pound for pound better, but it is still better. I mean, if you want probably your best bang for buck, you're probably looking at something like Ansonum. Ansonum is Chinese pharma.
Okay.
It's made by Ankibo, which is a Chinese pharmaceutical company, legitimate government-registered pharma company. Now, that generally retails about... Well, you can buy it direct from them, actually. And you're probably looking at about £1 an IU.
Okay.
Now, for effectiveness versus price, that's probably your best value for money.
Okay, interesting. Good.
But it's down to that, you know, is a... I don't know. You know, is a Bugatti Veyron worth four times the price of a Ferrari? Probably not. But it's still a better car.
I see.
So it's that sort of situation where, you know, if you want the best, unfortunately, you're going to have to pay top dollar. You can run the generics, but again, you've got this consistency issue. And obviously, you're putting more and more volume in to get the same effect.
Sure.
Generally, with the farmers, people in general won't get as many problems with such things like water retention or reaction welts where they inject and things like that.
Okay, right. I've seen this, like the red welts, correct?
Yeah, and that's just a basically, for want of a better term, an allergic reaction. Usually it will pass if you continue use.
Yes. I found, too, going intramuscular versus sub-Q sometimes helps with that.
Yeah, it can do, yeah. It's just it irritates the skin, basically.
Sure. Now, you had mentioned, too, you had said that you were not a big fan of Tren. It's frightening to me nowadays. Every time I look on the message boards, I see all these new guys out there that have never run a cycle in their lives, but they think that Tren is going to be this magic thing, and because it's so strong, they should use Tren in their first cycle. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, by that logic, then, next time you lock your keys out of your car, use a stick of dynamite to open the door.
Yes, I like that. I will be quoting you on that one.
It is a powerful drug. It is a very effective drug. It is also a very toxic drug. It's not for human consumption. Bear in mind that this is a veterinary drug we're talking about. It has limited research because of that, in the sense of its effect on human beings, because it's not intended for human being use. So the only evidence we have is anecdotal. There are quite a lot of animal studies. And if you take anything from what they say, then what we're looking at is a drug here that affects your dopamine receptors, so therefore can be mildly addictive.
Interesting.
It decreases your cognitive skill. It reduces your short-term memory. It mutates sperm. And it definitely has an impact on brain cell tissue.
Now, I saw that on the documentary. That's something I had not heard before.
Well, you think about this, okay? If you're taking a drug that gives you fucked-up dreams... And in some cases, for some people, very extremely violent fucked up dreams.
Sure.
Then surely that thing is fucking about with your brain chemistry.
Something has to be going on there, right?
Because when I take an aspirin, I don't dream that I'm raping and killing half my neighbors in my sleep. You know? I mean, in a way, for me with Tren, I don't get weird dreams. I don't get the night sweats. I get very little from the point of view of side effects.
Right.
The only thing I've noticed, I mean, old nandrolones affect your memory, and I have noticed, so this could be old age and senile dementia as well, but my memory is shot to pieces. And I have to generally look up things now because I just can't remember them.
Okay, you and me both.
I know what that drug does, but I know. I'll have to look it up. I just have a problem with memory, and I do believe, because I've pretty much run DECA nearly in every cycle I've ever done.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, Tren is powerful. It's very, very strong. But it's also very, very toxic. And as a first timer, you've got to look at the scenario. This guy going in to do his first cycle, his diet's probably not the best.
Right.
He definitely doesn't know how his body responds to certain foods at certain weights and how his growth potential is because he's never been there.
Sure.
Training could probably be improved massively. He's not saying he's a shit trainer, but there will definitely be room for a lot of improvement and more effective training.
Right.
He definitely won't build up the intensity levels that he really needs. And he definitely probably can't eat to the extremes that he has to because he won't realise how far you can actually go with clean food how much you can actually put away. So why throw that stick of dynamite in there when a little party popper will actually give him the same end result?
So I know you're not going to, you know, I don't want you to make any recommendations, but in your opinion and in your experience, what do you think like a good first timer cycle would be?
400 mega tests a week.
And how long would you run that for?
8 to 12.
Okay. And then any ancillaries with that?
You need a little bit of Novadex, and that should be it.
Okay. So you prefer using Novadex over an anti-aromatizing drug, huh?
AIs have rebound. Most people forget this.
Okay.
So they don't manage the rebounds. Letrozole, as far as I'm concerned, should never be used unless you're competing.
Okay.
It's too harsh. It's so efficient. People forget. Estrogen is actually responsible for helping maintain your good cholesterol levels.
Sure, sure.
Estrogen is actually responsible for the production of androgen receptors.
Yes.
If you don't have any estrogen in your body, you ain't going to fucking grow. So it needs to be managed. What guys tend to do is blunderbuss affect it and just try and get rid of it all. And then they wonder why they're doing a 2G cycle and they've got stronger, but they've not got any bloody bigger.
Yeah.
Ideally, you want to test. You want to do hormone tests before you ever start a cycle. You want to get a set of hormone palettes done so you have your baseline, so you know what's normal for you.
Absolutely.
And then once you're into that cycle, about a four-week point, you want to do some estrogen tests.
Okay.
And if you haven't put some form of management in at that point, I mean, I would always start probably on a low form of management, say just 20 or 40 mega Novadex a day.
Okay.
You can then manage it from that point. You look at those tests and go, right, okay, estrogen's 15% above normal. That's fine. I can leave that. I can cope with that. That's not an issue.
Yeah.
Estrogen's at normal. I could probably do with being a little bit higher to compensate for the fact that I've got so much test in my system than the extra demands that's placing on my body. Oh, my estrogen's low. Shit, I need to back off on this. Oh, it's way high. Right, okay, well, I need to just... okay, I'll have an extra one in retest in 2 weeks. But people don't do that. And then they wonder why the cholesterol's fucked to pieces. And they wonder why they're not growing or they've got this problem or that problem. And, I mean, some people just generally don't have an issue with estrogen. I mean, fucking hell, what was my last reading? I ballsed up with my management at one point. And I was symptom three, so I wasn't particularly bothered.
Okay.
And I thought, right, we'll test it and see where I am, because I know I'm not running anything, so I know it's going to be... And it was sitting at something like 400.
What?
The big guy now usually starts at 200.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was like, all right. And all I did was actually stick in 25 mega aromas in every day, and I had it back down within levels within 2 weeks. 3 weeks.
Okay.
So it's, you know, but over time you'll learn how your body responds and you won't need to test so much because you'll know, if I'm running about a G a test, I need about this amount of anti-E.
Sure.
But I'm running Masteron as well, so I know I can pull the anti-E's back a little bit because I know Masteron's going to be picking up some of the slack there. You know, and it's very much like people just don't structure courses like that. They don't think about these things because one, it's too much like hard work. and two, well, the mate didn't do it, and he's all right. Well, yeah. How do you know? Have you seen his blood work? Has he had blood work? Do you know what the inside of his arteries look like?
Yeah.
You know, people just don't think about this. You can be anal as well. There's got to be a balance. But, you know, you just need to be aware and just do some simple checks. It doesn't take a lot. But with regards to AIs, for a first cycle of tests, if you need an AI, then there's something seriously wrong with your estrogen.
Okay.
You've either got huge amounts of aromatase going on in there, or you're severely sensitive to estrogen levels. Because, I mean, Jesus, I don't think I used estrogen management for the first 4 years of using.
Really?
Even though I didn't know it existed.
Okay.
And that took me up to cycles of about 2G.
Wow. Yeah, you are definitely a rare breed then. If you could use no type of estrogen management while using that type of dosing, that's a lot higher than anyone I know has used without issues, without using at least something. That's.
You got to remember when I first started cycling at 19, I hadn't got a clue.
Yeah, yeah.
I ran two injectables and an oral.
Okay.
I went to the guy who was supplying. What you got's any good? I've got this. This is good. What is it? So. Okay, how do you take it? Oh, you need to inject it every other day. Right, fine. Okay, give me some of that. Enough for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And then 6 weeks later, I'd change something else. And that was how I structured my cycle. I had no knowledge whatsoever. Didn't have a clue.
Wow. Yeah, I see a lot of guys out there like that nowadays. It's frightening. And thankfully, there's people like yourself around and like the radio show here to at least help guide if they're willing to listen. Tell me a little bit. What's that?
Let's get away from the fact, right, these things can severely fuck you up.
Sure.
If you're going to put a poison in your body, at least learn how it works and what it does to you. If nothing else, learn what the signs are to look for that a problem is coming. But if you're sensible and you manage the risks, there's no reason why you cannot use these things with minimal negative effects.
So I'm going to have to switch gears here. We have a couple of listener questions to answer. But before we get to that, and before we plug the film, I do have one more question, and that is, was all of this worth it? You reached 415.
$4 million question.
Was it worth it?
Still deciding. Right, there's so many levels to this.
Yeah, yeah.
I found my limit, granted.
Okay.
So I've lost that unscratchable itch that I've had for so long.
Ah.
I tested myself, and through that, I learned to appreciate a lot of the things that I have.
Okay.
There's the effect on me and personal reward to me directly from the project. And realistically, probably the cons outweigh the pros, to be fair. You know, I had 18 months of pain, injury, and ill health. And at the end of it, looked like a mess, really. But then you go away from me and you look at the greater picture. And I think the impact this film can have, potentially, in educating people and showing people both sides of the coin, yeah, then it was worth it.
Okay.
If this film stops one person from fucking themselves up, or inspires one person to make themselves a better person or a better version of them in one way or another, or to improve the quality of their life, then, yeah, it was worth it.
Okay, fair enough. So switching directions here, just a couple of small listener questions. One person did directly write into you to ask, and this is a real easy one, what's your preferred time of day to train?
It's changed, actually, through the years. I now train, I wouldn't say early in the morning, but I now train about 8:30 in the morning.
Okay.
Works really well then, because basically I get home by 11 o'clock, I'm showered, fed, trained, and I can start my day. Now, I work for myself anyway, and I work from home, but it just means then I've got a full interrupted day, and I generally work through it till about 7, 8 o'clock at night.
Okay. Sounds like a long day to me.
Yeah, I enjoy what I do.
I can relate.
And I have a varied job as well, which helps, you know. Talking to you, in a way, it's work for me. So film promotion, and I've got my drawing as well, which I'll start back up again. So I'm always doing something.
Okay. Did you say drawing?
Drawing, yeah.
Really? I didn't know you drew.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I do what they call it hyper-realism.
Okay.
Very, very detailed animal drawings.
Was that elephant in the film? Is that yours?
Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful paint or drawing. That was nice.
Thank you. Now, I used to enjoy training back in the day around 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, because the gym I trained at the time was full of bodybuilders, big lads, powerful lads, power lifters.
Yeah.
And there was a real buzz and atmosphere about the place. But I would have said, probably from a performance point of view, my best time would be about 2 o'clock.
Okay. So how many meals do you have in you by 2 o'clock?
One, two, three, four.
So you got a lot of food in you by that point.
Yeah, about four.
That's about the same time I trained too.
But at the moment, the morning, I mean, I don't like training in the morning. I'm usually not awake till about the sixth day.
Sure.
But it works in every other way for me.
Okay.
And your body's adaptive and it just gets used to it. So, you know, you after a while, it becomes the norm.
Yeah, absolutely. Second question here. A gentleman has run his first cycle. It was a test-only cycle. He's done with that, and he's recovering. He's trying to plan a second cycle to run after he's ready. He was wondering what our suggestions would be for a second cycle.
What's wrong with another test-only cycle?
There you go. It's easy enough.
People look at like they must add more. Now, if you gained well on your last cycle, there's nothing to say you won't gain well again on the same cycle, particularly if you've had an extended period of time off in between.
Sure.
Now, if you've only had a couple of months off, then no, you may have to add something to the mix. But if you've had 4 or 5 months off, chances are you'll get pretty much the same response you got last time. A push, maybe throw in an oral.
Nah.
People expand their drug use far too quickly and far too early. Up until the UC1 project, I'd never run over 2G.
Okay.
And prior to the UC1 project, I was seeing 11% at 305 pounds. So if you need more drugs to continually grow in, then what was going on with me? Because I've pretty much run the same doses, the same cycles for the last 2-3 years.
Well, and I think, too, you have a real firm understanding of what it's going to take nutritionally, that we always have to continue adding food as we get bigger.
That's what people struggle with. Well, I wasn't growing as much. So I grow really well. No, you put loads of water on at the beginning.
Yeah.
Things plateaued. Well, of course they did. You didn't did you constantly increase your food? Well, I ate a bit more, but not more. Then, no. And this is the bit that people don't realize is the food bit is probably the hardest bit. It's definitely the most uncomfortable bit.
Sure.
And you've got to eat every hour and a half. And all you're eating is steamed rice, fucking slow-cooked boiled chicken, boiled red meat, broccoli.
It gets boring.
It's vital. You know, I rang for about 2.5 years of my life. I didn't, obviously I had cheat meals, I had meals out and stuff like that. But in general, I didn't eat any meal that was nice.
Yeah.
Majority of my meals were just there for function.
Sure.
And one of the big problems was then when I went out for a meal, I was in that mode. I just shoveled it in.
Yeah.
Because it was get it in, get it down, and get on with doing something else because you haven't got the time to be messing around. And I had to sit down and consciously start to think, no.
Right.
Slow down, savor, enjoy.
You're here with your wife. You're here to have a good time.
Yeah.
This is not a job right now.
This isn't eating for the sake of it to perform a function. This is eating for pleasure. Oh, this is novel. I've never done this before.
We forget.
Yeah. And that's the big thing that people struggle with is continually increasing food. And people tend to jump too big too quick with things as well. So, well, my maintenance is 2,000 calories, so I'm going on cycle. So I'm going to eat 3,500. Oh, the fuck? You know? Whoa, hang on. Or my last cycle was 500, so my next cycle is going to be 1.5G. Whoa.
Right.
Pull it back a little bit. We don't need such big jumps. Just one step at a time. So to answer his question, I see no reason why I can't run the same cycle again, or maybe a 20, 25% increase in dosage, or maybe run something like D-ball, just as an oral through it.
Okay.
Nice. Omega day or something. I don't think he needs anything drastic.
All right. And the last question that I have is, this guy wants to know how would somebody introduce growth hormone into their program? How long would we suggest running it? And what would be a decent dose to see muscle gains?
Right. Now, this is where we have issues, because most people run growth hormone for relatively low dose AMPM. Okay. That will improve condition.
Sure.
It will improve muscle growth over a long period of time, but you're probably talking 3 months before you really start to see massive changes, maybe even longer.
And what dosing are we talking when you say low
dose? Talking about 1 to 2 IU, AM, and PM.
Okay. Affordable.
Yeah, it's affordable, but it's a long-term game.
Yeah.
The other issue with this is at about the six-month mark, you'll probably have to start running about 25 micrograms of T3.
Ah.
Because growth hormone will start to blunt thyroid production. Now, the other way is obviously high levels.
Okay.
Now, with high-level growth, you're going to need high-level food. You're going to need high-level drugs. And you're going to need high-level training.
Yes.
Growth is a massive soft tissue recovery agent. There's no point putting it in there if you're not giving it something to fix. In order to have something to fix, you need to destroy your body in the gym. In order to destroy your body in the gym, you need a large amount of chemicals that are going to be able to boost your performance to the sort of level that you can destroy yourself in the gym. Then you're going to need a lot of food. The problem is you're probably not going to be able to eat that food. So then you're going to need something to help shuttle those nutrients into your system, and this is where insulin comes in. So, and then we have the other problem, which is high levels of growth can cause high levels of water retention. And then you can start getting stiff, like sore hands, sore joints. My hands on the last film were constantly painful for quite a long period of time.
Okay.
So, and it then becomes very expensive.
Yes.
So, what would probably be a halfway house would be something in the region of 6 to 8 IU every other day, PM.
Okay. You prefer nighttime, huh?
You were telling 6-5 IU of Pharma Growth in the morning?
I've never used Farm Growth, so I can't say yes to that, no.
Right, let's see if you can still keep your eyes open by 10 o'clock.
Really? No kidding, huh?
Hey, you do feel groggy. Yeah, you do feel groggy. No, to be honest, I mean, I've run PM, AM, PM. I've run every other day. I've run huge doses of growth. I've run 6-7 shots a day, getting up in the middle of the night.
Yeah, I saw that in the movie.
And by far, I found the best ratio for results to costs was 6 to 8 IU every other day PM.
Okay.
Water retention was manageable. Well-being feeling was good. Sleep was good. It allowed my own systems to bounce back in between shots. When I ran very high dose, multi-dose throughout the day, it was effective, but the impact on your life was just fucking hell.
Yeah.
You know, you feel tired all the time. And then you start having to look, oh, shit, now I have to do something about this. I can't keep my eyes open. So you start looking at stimulants, and then, you know, and it's another drug for another drug for another drug for another drug. And it's like, oh, when does this end?
Yeah.
So, but then again, I've seen, especially with Pharma, I've seen people have very, very, not so much growth, but very good recomp at about 1 to 2 IU.
Okay.
AM.
And you would still say that would be a long-term thing then?
You're not going to start seeing massive changes till you've been on it probably 6 weeks plus.
Okay.
And probably you're not going to see really noticeable change. What you'll start to notice is people start saying, you look well.
Hmm.
you know, you look really good. You look well. And they want me to put the finger on where it is.
Yeah, you just have a glow, right?
Yeah, you just have a glow. You like just come back off holiday sort of thing. You got a bit of a sparkle in your eye. Your skin looks fresh.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you'll start to see the physical changes within your physique. And it seems to, again, kick back in again around the six-month mark as well.
Really? Okay.
But, yeah, it's... It's a funny one, is growth, because it's so badly faked and so commonly faked that it's difficult to get a solid, reliable source.
Sure. Well, I appreciate having you on, Dave. Now, I'd like you to take a minute here and plug all your stuff, where everybody can find you, where they can find Under Construction 1 and now the new Under Construction 2. Tell us about anything that you have going on.
Oh, God. Right. Okay. Currently, I have a YouTube channel, You See the Freak, and that's letter U, letter C.
Okay.
In that, at the moment, I am currently working my way through slowly but steadily profiling all the different steroids.
Nice.
So at the moment, we're on orals. We've done oxys, we've done Anavar, we've done Winstrol, and we've done D-ball. So the next one on the list is T-ball.
Okay.
When we've got through the bulk of the orals, then we'll start looking at injectables, and then we'll look at blends, and then we'll start looking at ancillary drugs. I have my Facebook page, which is, again, Under Construction the Freak. That tracks me, sort of my day-to-day training and such like, and every bits and bats.
Okay.
And then we have the films, which are available from www.underconstructionthefilm.com.
Nice.
We have Under Construction 1, where I go from £300 to £365. And then we have Under Construction 2, The Dark Side of Bodybuilding, which is less about my fat ass and more about other various aspects. So within that, we go to see the body dysmorphia clinic. We get medical checks and we speak to a doctor about the effects the drugs are having. We go over to Denmark and look at the very strict drug rules there.
That was very fascinating, by the way.
We interview a owner of a UGL lab. And we get a black market chemist to make the drug for us. Plus, we see me attempting to hit £400. And basically, you see my slow deterioration as I go on that journey. It is a very dark film. It's a very emotional film. It covers a lot of personal topics. It tracks me through some very difficult times, both training-related and personally-related.
Yeah, this is not just a set and reps type movie. There's very little training in it at all.
Yeah, it is my life. It's a lot more emotional. It's a lot more deeper and darker. If you're expecting to see Ronnie Coleman and someone throwing around £600 on a bar, then you want another film. If you want to see a guy busting his ass trying to reach a goal and suffering severely for it, then this is the film you want to watch.
And not only that, but you are a guy that I feel like I can relate to. You're substantially bigger than me, but I feel like what you're doing is something that I feel more relatable to than watching somebody like Ronnie Coleman.
Well, that's because I am nobody. I'm not a pro bodybuilder, even though I dwarf most of them.
Wait, are you saying I'm nobody?
I'm nobody. Not me.
I know. I'm joking with you.
if the hat fits, I'm not going to take it off you. No, but I mean, I am nobody. I'm just a guy that set out on a stupid idea to see how far he could go and where his limit was size-wise.
Yeah.
You know, it's gained popularity, but I'm still the same person. And the one thing I am, online and through the film, is I'm brutally honest, even if it's at my own cost.
Yes.
There is no editing to hide aspects or to make me look good. If anything, the film makes me look worse.
I think it's that transparency that really makes me connect to it.
When people see me in the flesh, they're like, Jesus Christ, you look a lot better than I thought you were going to look. So, yeah, it is just, there's no bullshit. There's no cinematography in the sense of, you know, stageness or effects or plastic weights or, any of that bullshit. There's no Hollywoodisms.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's no, and I mean, I've got nothing against Rich Piana, but if there's no Rich Piana or that sort of thing, it's just me on a journey and encountering people on my way. It's beautifully shot. The cinematography is amazing. The picture quality, I mean, this is 4K.
And you're not exaggerating. It's really amazing.
The production value, I've got to take my hat off to James. I mean, James is self-taught. He's got a couple of projects under his belt now, but I mean, when we first got together, it was literally a, Dave, do you want to make a film? Yeah, go on then. All right, fair enough. And that's how it started. And we've grown into this, and we've just tried to be as truthful and honest and realistic as basically what happened on my journey. Most people will, if they're honest, say that they will start crying at some point through it. And the strange thing I found about it is I'm getting a lot of people that aren't into bodybuilding, that aren't into training in any way, shape, or form, and they absolutely love it.
Interesting. I could see that.
It's being described as a very brutally honest, emotionally funny, beautiful journey. I mean, it's down to the individual, but sure. Put it away, it's about me, and I can't watch the thing because I find it uncomfortable. So that should say something about it's worth a watch.
And I see it looks like you guys have a whole bunch of stuff there. There's the films that you can purchase. It looks like you've got some clothing and some other things that are available. So I highly suggest that everybody comes out and checks the website out, and that they come over and look for you over there on Facebook as well as on your YouTube channel. Is there anything else you have?
Well, I do. I offer my drug counseling services and all that sort of thing. I mean, I run a business, a harm reduction unit business, giving drug advice either to individuals or to groups.
Nice. If somebody were interested in that service, how would they reach you?
Email dave@crosslands.org.uk.
Great.
I mean, I currently provide the steroid and supplement awareness to the British military.
I saw that in the movie. That I wish we had more time, because I'd love to ask you, you know, about your job and what you do with them. Unfortunately, we are running a little bit low. So I got to tell you, I'm really happy to have had you on, Dave. You are just the nicest guy to talk to. So this has really
been
this has been my pleasure. Absolutely.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure being here.
So a big thanks to everybody tuning in tonight, and a big thanks to Dave Crossland for Advices Radio. I'm your host, Scott. Keep grinding.